Is baptism a mere symbol of rebirth? Is it a prize for attaining a certain amount of faith? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for May is Lutheranism 101, Holy Baptism. It's written by regular guest Pastor Charles Lehman. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Lutheranism 101, Holy Baptism by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Lutheranism 101, Holy Baptism. Folks, we are 35 days away from the beginning of the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference right here in Collinsville, Illinois. This is a conference that's going to feature Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, Pastor Will Wheaton, Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith, and others. It's going to kick off with a live broadcast of Issues, Etc. It's June the 14th and the 15th right here in Collinsville, Illinois. The Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference. If you have not registered yet, it's $100 per person, and you can register online, issuesetc.org. If you need some help, give Craig a call, 618-223-8385. The Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference. There are big stories and then there are huge stories, and some of the biggest stories we've watched come across the headlines in the last couple of weeks all have religion angles. They've been, some of them covered and some of them not. Joining us to talk about some of these stories, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway. She's a reporter in Washington, D.C. and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for having me here.
In this Pentagon religious speech story, what's the real problem? Is it Pentagon policy, or is it Mikey Weinstein, the founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation?
Well, the issue with the story was that we were getting a lot of alarming reports beginning in the last month or so. So someone talked about how the Army Reserve had put out a PowerPoint presentation that identified evangelical Christians and Roman Catholics as extremists. And it was on the same PowerPoint slide that labeled Al-Qaeda as extremists. And then there was news that the Southern Baptist Convention website could not be accessed on Army, Air Force, Navy, or Marine Corps bases, and that a little note popped up when you tried to go there that said that that site was flagged for hostile content. And then finally, there was the reports that Mikey Weinstein had met with Air Force officials and was pushing for a new policy that would ban evangelism in the military. So each of those stories, got out there. People were alarmed. And then the media kind of tamped them all down. They, you know, it turned out that, yes, that happened with the PowerPoint slide, but it was quickly corrected. And then also the website ban turned out to just be a software glitch. And then the Pentagon came out with a policy and it said, you know, you're fine. You can still evangelize. You just can't proselytize. So the media kind of responded by saying, well, I guess there's nothing to see here. Let's move along. But the thing is that there actually is something to see there, and it's worth talking about. So the Pentagon policy is the same as it's been. What Mikey Weinstein, who runs the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, is trying to do is get it so that people who do share their faith in what he considers a bad way would be court-martialed. So he did have a meeting with the military, and he is pushing in that direction. And that's not nothing. You know, that is something because he is kind of an influential voice in the military. And also, the idea that you can evangelize but you can't proselytize literally makes no sense because those words have identical meaning. I mean, so how does a military member know what's okay and what's not okay? And just the fact that this story has gotten so much press, I think it might make people be confused and not want to risk their military career by talking about their faith, which, that's a change. Even if the policy hasn't changed, it can change the culture of the military.
Is part of it the rhetoric that's being used by Weinstein? I mean, well, he talks about, he uses kind of extreme terms when he talks about what may just be a casual conversation between military compatriots.
Oh, I mean, that is definitely one reason why evangelical Christians are worried. This guy has unbelievably histrionic rhetoric, and he is treated like he's a normal, you know, person by the media. He has a column on the Huffington Post, and his most recent one he calls evangelical Christians monsters of human degradation, marginalization, humiliation, and tyranny. And so usually when people talk that way about a different religious group, we sort of shun them. And so the fact that he hasn't been shunned and gets to have meetings with top officials in the military, I mean, that's why people are a little bit worried about this.
The Pentagon itself, what is their, at this point in the story, what is their official position and how is that being covered?
Well, the policy is the same as it has been, and I think that people have done a good job of the media has done a good job of explaining that. And they also moved to distance themselves from Weinstein when people were like, you really took a meeting with this guy? They said, well, yeah, we did. He requested a meeting and we granted it to him, and he did, you know, get these top level people. He expressed his concerns about religious issues in the military, but we didn't change anything that we're doing. So their ideas, you know, they're just trying to kind of calm everybody down. But, again, the policy is the same, but what's at issue is that the climate in the military is worrisome to some evangelical Christians and other religious groups that are worried that they will be persecuted or you know, have their careers affected, or that this can even be used, like, even if it's not a real issue, just someone could hurt someone's career by accusing someone of proselytizing when they weren't or whatnot. So this will be something to watch.
In your Wall Street Journal piece on the subject, you end it by talking about the Pentagon needing to be kind of aware of the fact that these things take on a life of their own within minutes of hitting online forum, and that the Pentagon needs to be a little more proactive there for the tendency for people to believe what sounds, on the face of it, unbelievable when it comes to their policies. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I just think it's you know, some of these stories were exaggerated or they were not true, and others were true. I mean, like that PowerPoint thing really did happen, and people really, you know, Mikey Weinstein and the Military Religious Freedom Foundation have done a variety of things, some of which are, you know, completely defensible, and some of which some people view as hostile to evangelical Christians in the military. And so when the Pentagon is saying there's nothing to see here, they need to understand that Defense Department in general has sort of changed the way that they handle religious issues. Like, just by way of example, in 1941, FDR wrote the foreword to a special, like, military edition of the Bible, where he encouraged all soldiers to read the New Testament and the Psalms, which was actually what was handed out. And then a couple years ago, the military revoked the right of one Bible publisher to use military insignias on special, like, you know, an airman's Bible. I forget what they're called, like Holman Bible Publishers, Holman Bible. Now you can no longer have, like, these Air Force Bibles or Marine Bibles that used to be given to people in, you know, in a given group. So you just see sort of like this change over time in religious accommodation or how religion is treated in the military. And it's worth paying attention to.
Did you find a couple more questions on this? Did you find any coverage that did not deal with essentially evangelical Christians, but dealt with other branches of Christianity, or say proselytizing by Muslims in the U.S. military?
You know, I think that I did, but I can't remember exactly what comes to mind. But I do want to say that the Tennessean did some great coverage on this. A lot of the coverage you saw, people just sort of accepted what the military said. And I thought what the Tennessean did that was nice is they took everybody's statements and they quoted them, but showed the appropriate level of skepticism for each statement. And that showed a nice balance. And I believe it was in the Tennessean, although I could be wrong, that I saw people mention that this is not an issue that just affects evangelicals, but all religions that have a proselytizing element, which would be, you know, it's not just evangelical Christians. Mormons have this, you know, there's an aspect in Islam that would have this. You know, Judaism, for instance, doesn't, but other religions do, and it's not just evangelical Christians.
In terms of the raw journalism, did you find in the press coverage any particular cases, laying aside Mikey Weinstein's histrionics, did you find any particular cases of military personnel who had been disciplined or called on the carpet for any kind of proselytizing as kind of the data to fill up this story?
No, I don't think that there were any examples. Although what I did think was, and in fact, I think that, what I thought was interesting is if you read the comments to a lot of the stories that were out there, you would have people who claimed that they were in the military who would talk about how they didn't know anybody who'd been called on the carpet for any proselytizing. However, they did know people who were worried about it. And so that's what I think is an important aspect to the story that's not being covered. Just because there is no persecution of people for evangelism or whatnot does not mean that this is a non-story. If people within the military are very confused about what they can and can't do, that is also a story. And that does need to be covered, and I think that could be covered better.
Another huge story, obviously, the Benghazi debacle. There's more than enough press coverage of almost every angle one can think of to this tragic story. But you say there's an undercover religion angle in this otherwise huge story. What is it?
There are actually probably several undercover religion angles. For instance, just today I was thinking about how the initial Obama administration claim that this was basically like a bunch of crazy people reacting to a YouTube video can kind of feed into this perception that Muslims are nothing but irrational, you know, freaks who can't control themselves. And I don't think that, you know, we saw many stories about how that storyline affects perception of Muslims in general, like the average Muslim. But another story that I thought is huge was how the Obama administration's initial claims that this was related to a YouTube video led to a great deal of scrutiny and focus, journalistically, legally, and otherwise, on this guy who made the YouTube video, and he's currently in jail. And because of the scrutiny that was placed on him, even though he was he's in jail for fraud reasons, but I don't think anyone's confused about why he was the subject of an investigation. And the reality of that situation, but also the rhetoric of people who immediately in the aftermath called for restrictions on the First Amendment in terms of freedom of expression, it's alarming. It involved people in the government, involved media figures, involved academics, and, you know, they were completely wrong about tying this YouTube video to the terrorist attack at the Benghazi outpost. But also their instinct to call for a restriction on First Amendment protections, I think that deserves much greater scrutiny. And I am sort of alarmed that the media, again, just ran to cover this story in the way that the administration sort of suggested that they should. They should have applied much more skepticism, and they should have thought about the First Amendment implications of what they were reporting and how they were reporting it.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is our guest. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the religion angle on the Benghazi story.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shop.logia.org. Shop.logia.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shop.logia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shop.logia.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Here's a special offer for Issues, Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a recording of an Ascension and Pentecost sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Pentecost Sunday, May 19th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Ascension and Pentecost sermons. Now, when you make your gift, please indicate whether you want a downloadable version or a CD of these sermons. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us during the Easter season.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of the religion angles in some very big stories with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, before we were talking about the Benghazi story, do you detect a template that the White House was able to exploit either intentionally or unintentionally in this story?
Well, I mean, it's appalling, actually, how people covered this. I think that what was happening was people understood that this was a politically vulnerable situation, and they didn't like that some Republicans were using it as a cudgel against the Obama team. And so rather than just sort of set that all aside and think about what the story should be or how they should cover the story, they sort of overreacted and got into defense mode. It's appalling. I mean, it was really bad media coverage for a long time. It looks like finally we're seeing a little bit more skepticism, but it almost feels like a state-run media at times in how reflexively defensive some media types can be about spin coming from politicians who happen to be in office right now.
Do you think that, I mean, I don't want to single out any administration because they all at least attempt to do this to their best ability. It's part of their task to shape stories.
Good job.
Do you think that this White House is either better at it or has more willing cooperation than other administrators?
Right. That's the difference. And usually in a newsroom, like if you have a Republican in office, we're all very good at being skeptical about the spin that's coming out of that office. And you just want to see that same skepticism applied no matter who's in office. And that has been seriously lacking. And the thing is, like, even many media figures will admit that. They'll say, no, we've been way too easy, or we've covered for this president and whatnot. But then it just keeps happening. And I just think, okay, this really should stop now. Just for the sake of the country, it's good to have a skeptical press that holds people accountable. And when it involves the murder, this evil murder of four of our men who were putting their lives on the line, you would think that if nothing else, that would be good reason to start holding people more accountable. That it's finally happening 9 months later is okay, I guess, but it's embarrassing that they had to be pressured into doing it, basically.
What about the assumption that when there is some kind of uprising involving, I guess, what other journalists have called the Muslim street, as in Benghazi, that the impetus must be either American or Western insensitivity to Muslim sensibilities, whether it be a video or a cartoon or whatever it may be?
It strikes me as so condescending, too, to not, you know, what really needs to happen, you'd think that after decades of us being involved in this type of conflict, is journalists should really be doing a good job of shedding light on the nature of the conflict, which is a global conflict that involves a lot of different players and actors and whatnot. They should be shining a light on the seriousness of that conflict, what's at stake, what's going on, what's political, what's religious, what's tribal. You know, there are all sorts of different elements, and journalism should be focused on that. It's really easy to cover something from your own perspective, and I think that's part of why people look to, like something domestic here in the States as a cause. And also it flatters ourselves to think that we can control something as simple, you know, by just jailing this guy or whatnot, or targeting him. But there are good journalists who are doing a good job of covering this very complicated conflict. And, we just need to see more of that.
Returning to a story that you actually became a part of in a way, appearing on Fox News at one point to essentially blow the whistle on the media for their lack of coverage of the Kermit Gosnell trial. With regard to the Gosnell issue, you say that there is a systematic problem in the press about how these kind of stories in general are being covered. What is that systematic problem?
Well, I don't even know all of the aspects of what makes it a systematic problem, but I have picked up on a few of the things. One of the things that I found, when the Gosnell story happened, a lot of people were alarmed by what one Washington Post reporter said as to why she hadn't covered this story, even though it would normally have been in her beat. She said, "I don't cover local crime." And that was horrifying to a lot of people, and she since admitted she was wrong and whatnot. But what I found almost worse was the editor of the whole paper. He said, I had no idea this story was even happening. And that to me shows, you know, a serious systematic problem within the industry of just ignorance of reality. And you know that, for instance, the Washington Post has its finger on the pulse of whatever's happening in the pro-choice movement, and you can see that in how they cover the Susan G. Komen Foundation or Sondra Fluke or Todd Akin or any of the, you know, hundreds of stories related to that. They do a very good job of having their finger on the pulse, but they don't do a good job of understanding what has been one of the biggest pro-life stories in years, and they didn't even know it existed. So I think what we need to see is some efforts to maybe change hiring practices so that not everybody is in the same bubble where they care about the same issues. You need to see if that's not possible, if the outreach efforts to have a more diverse staff fail, then maybe it would be helpful to have some sort of system in place to make sure that you don't miss big stories like this. And so just, you know, there are many ways to solve the problem, but those are just a few ideas I have.
Your colleague at Get Religion, Terry Mattingly, recently said here on this program that the, such as it still exists, the American newsroom is the most homogenous place in all of America. It sounds like you concur.
Yeah, I mean, I have experience with newsrooms where you have to have like a master's degree in journalism to get in. And that's a very bad idea, I think. You know, you don't need any special skill to be a reporter, I don't think. You just, you know, you learn how to write and you get the story. But when you have everybody come from like the same few schools who have the same sort of perspective, it can really limit your ability to cover a story fully, or to cover a story in new and interesting ways. It can contribute quite a bit to you missing big stories. And so just for the sake of the industry, which is suffering enough as it is, you know, we have major credibility problems and they're not exactly getting better. I would hope that newsrooms would put a little effort into improving that.
Where does the ultimate responsibility lie for dropping the ball on a story like Gosnell, as long as it was dropped and fumbled around for? Does it lie with, as you mentioned before, kind of the ground level of the newsroom, the reporters themselves who are supposed to be hunting for stories, or does it lie with the editors?
Okay, everyone shares in the blame. Everyone shares responsibility here. But I think it's really important to remember that reporters have, you know, to take a lot of direction from editors, and also the editors are the ones who hold them accountable. And so I think, you know, again, to go back to this Washington Post example, part of the problem is that the paper has set up a system where they have people who are kind of partisan covering policy issues, but they get to sometimes express their opinion and sometimes they're writing news stories, and it can be a very confusing thing. Are they supposed to be advocating for their own particular views, or are they supposed to be reporters? And when their stuff is printed in the newspaper, it's just printed as if it's from any other reporter frequently. And this can be, you know, there are all sorts of things with that paper that contribute to messing up a story such as this. Ultimately, the responsibility lies with the editor. And I mean, ultimately, I'm kind of surprised that no one's losing a job over this. I mean, it's just absolute shameful, embarrassing problems in how this story was covered and how some other stories are covered. And if no one is expected to be held accountable for it, I don't see it improving. And I don't think that the person who should be punished should be the reporter per se. I mean, the reporter should have had better direction from her editors.
I don't know too much about how it actually works in the newsroom, but it's part of the problem, especially with the print press, that there really is about one or two sources of news wires, of news services. And if they're not doing it, then the paper's not signaled to do it, and they're buying a lot of their news that fill their columns.
Amazing about the Gosnell story is that the Associated Press actually had been covering this story, so anyone could have picked it up on the wire, like very easily. And the very limited coverage that we saw tended to be from these AP wire reports. But they were not great. In fact, there were some serious problems with how that story was being covered by the AP, but they were doing it. So why were they not picking up these things that they were already paying for? I mean, it's kind of weird, isn't it?
What about the outcome of the Gosnell trial? How do you think that is going to be covered?
No, I mean, I think that there's a potential for some really interesting outcomes, and I think that no matter what the outcome is, you know, we will see coverage. It's the jury is in, you know, they're finishing up their first week of deliberations, and there are media that are there in the courtroom every day, sort of waiting for this to drop. So I think that no matter what the outcome is, no matter what the verdict is, it will be a very interesting thing that people will be curious about. So I look forward to seeing the coverage of it, and I hope that no matter what the verdict is, that the media can develop their imaginations a little bit better and think of interesting follow-ups and angles for the implications from this story in terms of policy implications and otherwise for the years to come.
I think about this every time I talk with one of you Get Religion people, and we've talked in the last half hour or so about the Pentagon, the religion angle there, the Gosnell story, Benghazi. These are three huge, gigantic stories. These are kind of stories that make top 10 lists at the end of the year, all of them with a religion angle. Do you think that just by sheer force of gravity, at some point, the American press says we need to improve our religion angle covering because every story seems to have something something to do with it?
I am so cynical about this because actually, if you go back any year and you look at the top 10 stories, you know, what reporters consider the top 10 stories, they always have, almost all have huge religion angles. And yet, you know, the media continue to kind of neglect the God beat. People keep losing their jobs. And then the reporters who remain have to do more and more work with fewer resources. So I don't know. I do think, though, that while the traditional media is in decline in this regard, you are seeing some really fresh, interesting ways of covering religion. And you're seeing a lot of good reporters who just work independently. And so I'm not all doom and gloom, even if I think that the institutional media is having some problems here.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
Folks, Issues Etc. is listener-supported. And if you've enjoyed listening this week, and I know you have, please consider making a tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. As usual, thanks for listening, and thanks for your support during all of the Easter season. Monday on Issues Etc., we're going to talk with Wesley Smith about transhumanism. Sounds like a bizarre topic, but believe it or not, it's something that people are actually attempting. And we'll discuss the Day of Pentecost with Pastor Tom Baker. That's Monday on Issues Etc. I'll talk with you then. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org, and click Find a Church.